There are two handouts or booklets. This one is inside your white folder. The first, you can see where it says session one, I paperclipped together both sessions, this session this morning, which is on the business of caregiving, that's all paperclipped together for you, so you kind of have some order to it. The session this afternoon, even if you're not coming, you will have the handouts and information to help you over a period of time. But that's for session two, and that's also in the handout packets. So we're just worried about business right now, okay? And in there is this booklet from the Alzheimer's Association. I will be referring to it also. So all you need out of the packet right now is session one, which is the business of caregiving, and the first handout starts out, I believe, with steps for getting a diagnosis. Is that the first one? It should be.
Yeah,
steps for getting a diagnosis. That's handout number, that all of that paper clipped together is for this session. Okay. The way they had set it up was so that I have a lot to share, but I'm just going to be able to cover the main points, because we could be here for a month and not be through in talking about caregiving issues. So we've broken it up that this morning's session is basically on the business end of things, things that we need as caregivers or potential caregivers to take care of as soon as possible, those types of things. And then this afternoon, I'm really talking basically just on how you, as a caregiver, can take care of yourself. So that's the way it's broken up, so you get an idea. Both, this is excellent, and I'll be referring to it, and we'll talk more. The Encino Chamber of Commerce puts out a phenomenal handbook for the San Fernando Valley only, that has tons of references. Alzheimer's Association has some things in it that are in here also. This has a lot more of each thing. Alzheimer's explains more in detail certain things. So both books are valuable. The bad news, that's the good news, but the bad news is Encino, this is the 2019 booklet, and they're going to print for 2020. So I only have about 85 of these, and they're out on the table. So if you really feel you need one of these that really breaks down just tons of information, basically it's phone numbers and or addresses of all sorts of things. And I'll go through it a little more later. But this booklet is out in the back, and you can pick it up as you go if you feel it's something you really need. This one is phenomenal. You'll want to keep it. And everyone, we have plenty of these. So if you know someone that needs one and is not here, we have extras here at the church. Okay, so I just wanted to go out over the go over an overview of the two sessions. I've done that pretty much. I will be repeating this first session in the second session also, because it's kind of laying the groundwork of where we're at and what is going on. So you will hear me repeating some things also, and actually repetition is a great teacher, so, and we remember better. I have a question. How many caregivers are in the room right now? You're actually a caregiver. Okay, now I am not talking about if you're a paid caregiver, like you work for an agency or you've just done this as your business, but you're a family member, or you're caring for a very close friend. So the rest of you at this point are not caregivers, is that the case? How many of you think you may be a caregiver? Okay, and guess what? That's really something that we have to deal with, because we many times don't think of ourselves as a caregiver when we really are. We just are thinking, well, my husband and I are getting over, we just have to take care of each other. It's that type of a thing. But really, when responsibility begins to fall more on you one way or the other, or you begin to feel certain things, this is when it becomes clear that you are a caregiver, whether you've accepted or used that name or not. Webster says that a caregiver is a person who provides direct care. You're hands-on, in other words. Well, a lot of times a person can be like a long-distance caregiver. They live far away and they can't be hands-on, but they're carrying the burden of their loved one and the concerns and caring for all of those types of things, even though they're long-distance. A quick example, my mother lived with my sister in another part of the state, and I was so concerned about her, and she had many issues, but God, this is just personal, but God worked something out that I had to drive into LA to work every day, so I had almost an hour to talk to her and pray with her on the phone and find out what was going on. But I was carrying the burden, even though she's 500-600 miles from me. So you may be in that situation too. Caregivers come in all sizes and shapes. You can be a spouse, caring for a spouse, or you can be caring for children with special needs. A caregiver who is caring for a child with special needs, that's a lifelong situation. You could be children seeing that you're needing to help your parents. I loved what DeCourcy had to say this morning about all of this and the family and how actually at the end of life, there is role reversal many times, and it's going to be a situation where we are caring for our parents. So we can have long-distance caregivers. We can have caregivers of special needs children. We can have children that are caregivers. And a very interesting and newer phenomenon that's really come to light is caregivers of veterans, because many veterans are coming back, and they're coming back totally different from what they were when they went. And so there's a lot of issues for caregivers that are very special, and they're really beginning to address that, special issues for caregivers who are caring for their loved one, whether it's a spouse or son or daughter that's a veteran that has special needs. So caregivers come in all sorts of ways. Just a few little statistics to start you off. 75% of caregivers, of adult caregivers, obviously, although there are some teenagers that are doing caregiving for grandparents and what have you, but 75% are women. And men are involved, but generally not directly with the physical part of it. It's really a difficult thing for a son to try to dress his mom, as an example, or bathe her. You know, these are things that are difficult. We don't think about these kinds of things. And so there's all of these different issues. And we'll talk about that and emotions and everything this afternoon. But that's just the way things break down. And spouses spend more hours per week as a caregiver than children or friends, other types of caregivers. So they spend more time per week. And I just wanted to give you that information. The next thing I want to do, you'll see on your outline, and I'm going to come over here, is to just have a comparison really quickly of chronic versus acute. And this is where, oh boy, I saw dialing. I hope my pens hold up. I couldn't find many. A chronic disease is something that is ongoing, okay? And an example of a chronic disease, and is one everyone's familiar with, would be like arthritis, or it could be diabetes, or it could be Alzheimer's disease, or some other form of dementia. But with these chronic diseases, there's no cure. Pray for the pens. Okay, with an acute situation, such as if you break a leg, you're taking care of the person with a broken leg for a while until they can take care of themselves, but there's a cure for that broken leg or a treatment. Okay, let's. There is a box, and some of them do or I'll take a red one. That's, I haven't tried them. I tried the green and, okay, perfect. There's a treatment for it. Does that work? Okay. Now, which, you tell me which you think works best, the red or the blue from back there. Okay, we'll work on this. With a chronic disease, and many times chronic diseases are what we're dealing with as a person gets older, even though they may not have dementia, or they may not have, oh, this is wonderful, okay? All of these things. Let's see. Well, I'll do it this way. I think I know what I'll do it this way. Okay, so with a chronic disease, it's long lasting. You don't expect it to end. With an acute disease, it's short term. With a chronic disease, what's been normal in your life for years? You've always done this together. You've always gone with your husband to get coffee at Starbucks and what have you. And it's just a routine. Things have changed now. So that is no longer the normal. So normal changes. With an acute situation, even though you may think it's terrible to have to hear the crutches clunking around or wait on them hand and foot with a broken leg, whatever, you return to normal. You get over it. And also with a chronic disease, which most of us are involved with as far as caring for somebody, there's uncertainty. About the future. You just do not know what is ahead. And with a broken leg or what have you, something that's acute and that passes with time, you're dealing with certainty. I just wanted to establish this because, excuse me, when we're dealing with caregiving, we're basically dealing with something that's chronic. that's not going to change. There are some things that do change once in a while, but most of what we're talking about is going to be that way. And so this session, I just want to establish this, but now this specific session is about the business part of it. And so the first part in the outline is the medical issues that we're going to talk about. I can only just cover the bases, and I've given a lot of handouts so you can read through and find out for yourself, because there's just so much, but just to cover the bases. And the first handout is steps for getting a diagnosis. So if you'll pull that out real quickly. I just want to, on the first page, where it says steps for getting a diagnosis, I'm just going to read bullet point 1 and 3 because they're so important. Many things, and oh, by the way, one thing I didn't mention, but I have to. Alzheimer's Association has very kindly given us tons of this information that I'm passing out to you. And you say, yeah, but my person doesn't have Alzheimer's, or I hope my person never gets it, or what have you. Alzheimer's Association has been in the business for a long time of caregiving. If they're dealing with Alzheimer's, they're absolutely dealing with caregivers, and they have their act together. And so whether your loved one has Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia, or whether your loved one is just getting old, or you just want to know more, whatever, why you reinvent the wheel. All of this information, even if the only thing with your, like my mother, just was getting old with age, you know, she got up into her 90s. Even if it's something like that, all of these principles, these techniques and everything, are applicable for wherever you are at with your loved one. So first bullet point, many things can cause dementia, that's what they say, which is an intellectual decline severe enough to interfere with a person's daily routine. Well, arthritis, really bad arthritis as an example, can be enough to interfere with your daily routine as you're getting older. So this is why I'm trying to make it clear that this will work for anybody as they're getting older and what you're working on. But in the end of that first bullet point, it says, it is important to identify the actual cause, and they're talking about dementia, and I'll mention that more, in order for the individual to receive the proper care. And bullet point 3, an early diagnosis allows more time for the future. Decisions regarding care, living arrangements, financial and legal issues, and other important issues can be addressed. And that's the basis of what we're going to be doing today, especially talking about getting a proper medical diagnosis, the financial issues, and the legal issues. I can't emphasize enough the importance of getting a proper diagnosis, because as an example, again, I'll use a personal example. My brother-in-law up north was originally diagnosed with Parkinson's. And because they were not really doing a good diagnosis, a thorough diagnosis, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes, because they were not doing that, they gave him a medication that absolutely just exacerbated his whole issue, and he had more hallucinations and more issues with walking, it was really, really bad. And after the fact, because the doctors knew the medication that he had been given, they realized he shouldn't have had that because his true identity was Lewy body disease. And with Lewy body disease, antipsychotic medications, anticholinergics, and also some anti-Parkinsonian medications can cause just horrible, horrible reactions that could even end up with death. So, and the same is true with Alzheimer's disease. Almost completely, an Alzheimer's person that has a true diagnosis of Alzheimer's should not be given psychiatric medications because they interact. A lot of times if people, and I could spend 2 days, 3 days just talking about different issues with Alzheimer's, but I really can't right now. But the point being is that for instance, I ran daycares. That's the love of my life. I ran daycares for seniors. And I did this for over 20 years. And most of the people that came into my program had some form of dementia. They had dementia from diabetes that was out of control. They had dementia from Alzheimer's. They had dementia associated with Parkinson's, or they had dementia because of a stroke. Dementia is just an example. The different types of dementia are ones that I just listed, and there's more even listed in this paper that you can be reading on your own. But I had a lady definitely diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she was moved by court order from her home into a residential place, and they gave her a psychiatric medication. She happened to be a very flamboyant, she could have been an actress, you know, type of person. So she was very verbal, and the way they wanted to control her behaviors was with a psychiatric medication. She almost died. Fact is, there's a medication, I won't mention the name, but it even says in its disclaimer, not for those with Alzheimer's. So I say all of this to say that wherever you are at with a loved one and or taking care of yourself as time goes on, know what the diagnosis is. And in this book, in this little handout, it goes through this completely. This, again, is for people that they think they have dementia or Alzheimer's and the process. But the same process should hold true for you. You, as the caregiver or potential caregiver, and even if you're not a caregiver, you still have the right by law for a second opinion. And you need to be able to take advantage of that. You need to establish. Let me give you another relative up north. Her daughter took her mother to the doctor. They did some very, just a regular doctor, did some very preliminary testing and said, oh, she has dementia. Therefore, we're going to put her on medication. I texted her daughter and I said, what type of dementia? It makes all the difference because you use different medications for different diseases. And you, as the example I gave my brother-in-law with Lewy body that was given the wrong medication, it's the same type of thing. So that it's important to have it. So the daughter, I was texting her what to do and to ask her what kind of dementia it was. She read the text to the doctor. When the doctor heard all what I had said in the text, to be sure you find out because medications, suddenly let's order some tests. Let's do this and let's do that. You need to advocate for yourself. You need to advocate for your care receiver, especially if they are not able to advocate for themselves. But it never hurts to have someone else advocating. So this is really a responsibility that you need to take on. And it's not that difficult. And this afternoon, I'm going to be talking about how to communicate so that you can communicate with doctors or with your care receiver if you're having issues getting them to hear you or believe you or respond to you. I'm going to be, talking about those things this afternoon. So the other thing that's really, really important, well, two things I need to say. Depression mimics Alzheimer's many times, as far as memory loss or forgetfulness or confusion, because when a person is depressed, it's so difficult to pull yourself out, so difficult to focus and to think. So again, another reason to get a proper diagnosis. And this is a lot to do with confusion and forgetfulness and what have you. I will say this, that as we get older, because I are getting older myself, that we have normal memory, normal age-related memory changes. We don't have memory loss. We have memory changes. They're two separate things. As we get older, for different reasons, our memory changes. It does not mean you have a memory loss, which is a diagnosis, which many times is a precursor to Alzheimer's disease. So it's vitally important. And so also, if someone has had a lot of tiny little strokes, they're called TIAs, that stands for trans-ischemic attacks, just itty-bitty little strokes. If they have a lot of those, that can mimic Alzheimer's disease also, with just confusion and forgetfulness. But the basis for the illness is totally different. So you have to treat it totally differently. Enough said on that. We have to move on. I want to just talk about the fact that of accessing medical services. If you'll take this little booklet just real quickly, just to point out to you, and turn to page 24, you will see health insurance and Social Security. These are major things that can help you in terms of finding out what your loved one has or doesn't have. Plus, hopefully, all of you know if your loved one has insurance and what type of insurance. It's extremely important to know, but these are basic areas, and Social Security can, these are major numbers that you can go to try to get some help. But also, I just wanted to show you on page 32, again, and you can read through this. Every word in this is worth reading, trust me. If your loved one or you are having issues with paying for your medications, here are some different options that you can contact. I'll be talking in a minute about Medi-Cal. I'm sure we've all heard of Medi-Cal here in California. But a lot of what is in this booklet, it gives for people who have regular insurance, but it also for people that are on low income and therefore are on Medi-Cal or do not have a lot of finances to go to different places. So this is really good if this is something that you need. I didn't get a drink. Okay, and then on page 17, just real quickly, especially with an older person dental issues are quite a challenge, especially if your loved one refuses to go. And you need to keep their mouth as healthy as possible because that is an indicator of how the rest of the body is working also. So it's a real challenge, but here are some ways to help. And also, it explains things and gives numbers to help you. So it's very good. I want to talk to you just a little bit about preparing for doctor's visits. You need to be aware, and these are things that are not in here, so if you need one to write these down, and I'm sorry, there's not paper to write on, so you'll have to write on the back of your handouts. There's the outline, but the outlines take up the whole page, and the back side is not empty on the outlines, so you'll have to use the back of your handouts to write on. But just very quickly, when you're preparing for a doctor's visit, whether for yourself, but especially when you're caring for someone or taking someone, be aware of any pre-appointment restrictions like fasting. When you're going in for the first time, write down all the symptoms or unusual behaviors. Write them down. And then, as time goes on, if you're consistently caring for someone, my husband and I, we just ask each other, how are you doing? What's going on? And we're fine. But if it came to the point that I could not tell my husband what I was doing, or he was seeing something really off the wall, more off the wall than usual, let me put it that way. That should be logged in. So you keep a diary of what is happening with your loved one. Don't think anything is too unusual to write down, because what you may not think is important, the doctor's ears perk up, oh, that's a symptom of, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So make, just be very good at anything that's written down, whether you do it once a day or you have a log where you can just jot something as you're going around, write it down. Because trust me, by the time you get to the doctor, you're not going to remember everything that you, I mean, I have to make notes to what I'm going to ask the doctor. We all do. So if you're thinking about somebody else, and you saw this 2 weeks ago, maybe if it's every day 20 times, you might remember it. But it's still important to log everything and keep it for future visits. I recommend that, and this doesn't hurt for any of us just as far as ourselves, but especially if you're caring for a loved one, get whatever is comfortable for you, whether it's a spiral-bound notebook or a notebook that closes up, a journal or whatever, but something big enough where you can keep the loved one's medical records, the past visits, keep, and maybe a three-ring binder is the best thing because you can just hole punch, but whatever it is, keep everything together, the list of medications, dates of the appointments, the list of doctors and their phone numbers, their Medicare or Medi-Cal cards, their insurance card, any of those things. And by the way, the easiest way to do it is to make a good copy and keep the originals at home. But keep everything together so that, say you're a child checking in on your mom, and you know you have to take her to the doctor on Thursday, and you're running late because you just barely got your kids to school, and here you are running over to get your mom, and she may not even be dressed. For you to find what you need just like that and go out the door and be to the doctor's office to sit and wait for a while. No, the thing is, you need to have it all together, easy at hand. Maybe you keep most of it with you if you don't live in the home. but you know where it's going to be in the home, that has a special place where it always will be, so that you can go right to it. And that will, and then all you grab off the refrigerator, all of these different log things that you've thought about. I would also recommend that when you go get into the doctor's office and you have this whole list of behaviors or things that are going on or questions, you're going to have to filter out what is most important that you feel you need to ask the doctor, because you're not going to get a half hour with the doctor. So you're going to need to just, in other words, you have a lot of prep ahead of time. But let me say this, there's 24 hours in a day, and we hopefully sleep 7 at least, because we need it. There's a lot of 15-minute increments. And what I tell people, get your phone out or your calendar, if that's what you work with, set a date for yourself when you're going to organize things each week or whatever you need to do. In other words, just plan on 15 minutes that you're going to update things or write things in a log. If you try to do everything all at once, you'll get overwhelmed, whether you're caregiving for your loved one or taking care of the business issues. So the thing is, break it into increments and congratulate yourself on what you do get done. And if you need to make more time, set another 15-minute date with yourself to do it. But these are ways to take control of situations which many times you feel are getting out of hand. I'm not even beginning to talk about if the loved one falls and you have emergencies and those types of things. But in the best scenario, that you're able to kind of plan and keep things going correctly. I would encourage you, especially if you're taking your loved one and they are not able to ask questions and or hear what the doctor is saying, definitely that you go with them. But I would even encourage you to take a third set of ears along to hear what the doctor has to say, because what one person hears, the other person may not, even if neither of them have cognitive issues. Seriously, we hear what we want to hear, or we miss for whatever reason. And so my husband and I, for the most part, when he broke his hand, I was right there listening to hear things, what the doctor said that he may not hear, because my husband was concerned about his broken hand, okay? And I was listening for other things. So it's really important, because then you can compare notes and get a better picture. So these are just things to help you to make things easier for you in the long run. And then, like I said, just the three questions for the doctor, the three most important. In terms of the specific health issues, I'm not going to talk about those now, because there's a full range. I can't go through a lot. I use some diseases and health issues as examples. But I need to move on. What I would say is that in this booklet, there's a complete list of different specialists and what have you that would be helpful to you if you need it. But even more helpful, trust me, if you need to learn about the disease that your loved one is involved with, this is in your handout. It's the very last page in your handout, should be. If it's not, I hope. It better be. Yes, it's on the second packet. Oh, it didn't get put in on the first packet. But everyone that's in this class or that class gets this. But in the second session, the very last page, this has a list of phone numbers and websites for all the different diseases that you might need to learn about. Okay? Cancer support, hospice, Parkinson's, cystic fibrosis, cerebral palsy. Another really, I will point out, if you have this piece out right now, I will point out to you a phenomenal resource is halfway down, and it's called Family Caregiver Alliance. It is phenomenal. You have some handouts from them. These people have been in the business of caregiving for a long time. They really know what's going on. So there's all sorts of things. This is extremely important. We're going to move on to Power of Attorney for Health Affairs. I'm going to speak very quickly. That's on your outline. There's two powers of attorney that are really important. One is for healthcare, and one is for fiduciary or financial. This is something that everybody needs to really get right away. You're not in the point where there's going to be some caregiving that's maybe coming in the future, you still need to do it, even if you're a younger couple that has been married 5 or 6 years or whatever. You need to have someone that's listed to have power of attorney for health care and power of attorney for financial care. I have questions. This is... some do, but the point is you need, I want to get to question and answer, so I am going to go very fast, because I still have to let you out on time, even though we started late. So I would just say that when you are signing to give someone power of attorney, you have to be cognitively intact. So that's why it's important to get it done way ahead of time. An elder lawyer may be able to help you if in fact the person has cognitive issues and may not be able to make, they have legal ways of doing it. Real quickly, check to see if your loved one has long-term care insurance, especially if they're going to have to go into residential care, or what they're still living at home can be in an adult daycare like I used to run. The seniors would come during the day. We would take care of them. We'd monitor them. We'd have activities, and they were happy. Some of them thought they were at work, that type of thing. And then they would go home in the evening. And that has given the caregiver a break. Maybe she just went in and took a bubble bath. Whatever it was, there was the ability to help. And for working caregivers, it was really helpful that their loved one was okay while they were still working. So many health and long-term care insurances will pay for a daycare, will pay for residential care, for skilled nursing. You have to check some of these things out to be sure. Medi-Cal is for people who with lower income, but with everything that's happened with Obamacare and everything, things have changed, and so there's a lot going on, so a lot more people might qualify for Medi-Cal. The thing to watch out about with Medi-Cal is if your person's in a skilled nursing facility and they pass away in there, Medi-Cal can go back a couple of years, what they call grandfathering, and take money from the estate in order to pay for some of the services that were in the skilled nursing facility. Things constantly change here in the state of California as far as laws and regulations. So I could talk a whole bunch more about things. You have, in terms of financial issues, you need to talk about this now while everyone's able to talk about it. Who's going to be in charge? Which sibling is it going to be that's handling the finances? Is it the spouse? Has the spouse never done anything with finances? If that's the case, the spouses should cross train. So the spouse that's never done anything with handling insurance or finances or anything, banking, that they learn or at least have it written out so that they know, so that they're not, you know, just hit with all of these things that they have absolutely no idea what to do with. So all of this needs to be done. Here's the bright spot. Also, in both of these books, they mention elder lawyers. I totally recommend for anybody, if you have any questions, to get an elder lawyer involved in order to help you set up power of attorneys. Yes, it can be done online, but you have to be sure that things are legal and that they will be accepted in a court of law, that type of thing. An elder lawyer is phenomenal. There's a list of a lot of them in here. And they really help. They help my husband and I set up our living trust. A living trust is wonderful. There's living wills. In this booklet, Financial Planning, it talks all about that. It gives every detail of what you need to know, living will, living trust. It gives about elder lawyers, different ones that can help. This, you really need to read through. You need to get this done now rather than later. You can attest to that, right?
I just wanted to say, very important. What she just said is the most important thing that she said.
Right.
Although the other stuff was wonderful.
Right. It is.
If you have a power of attorney from a person and they become incompetent, as far as I know, you have to go to court and get.
You do. You do.
I had conservatorship of my mother the last 6 years of her life. She had Alzheimer's. It ended up costing us about $200,000 because there was.
Right. And the another really important thing, she said it costs $200,000. A really important thing, if the person has assets, and if they have a house, I mean, right now, it's at least $250,000, maybe more, because the price is here. That kind of stuff will be contested in court between siblings and whatevers. If there's not a living trust or a living will, a living trust I really recommend for that. You're going to go to court. It'll go to probate. Even so, a will, just a will handwritten, can be contested, and that goes to court. And then who gets all of the assets? The state. So the thing is to protect yourself. And an elder lawyer knows all the laws and regulations of the state of California, and they know how to move assets around so that the person qualifies for long-term care but does not cause the loved ones, the caregivers, to go into the poorhouse over it. It's extremely important. This is very important for you to, very important. I haven't even really had a chance, and I have to get us going to stay on time. I'll just say this, be on the lookout for your loved ones if there's any financial fraud or abuse going on. Don't feel inhibited about talking or getting help with that. You need to watch and protect, because they're not always aware of when someone calls them and they say, oh, they need to, you know, do such and such. What I have not talked about, again, is in your handbook, it's the last page. It's called Choosing a Care Facility. That's about transitions. Because the real issue is that suddenly children are becoming the parents of their parents. Yeah, thank you. I got lost there. And that is a hard thing because some of us need our mom to always be our mom. But we have to make hard decisions. So read carefully. This can be duplicated. There's a checklist on if you have to move your loved one. This is all under transitions. But if you have to move your loved one into a facility, it explains the different types of facilities that there are, what to look for when you see that it's something that you know they can't live at home anymore. Oh gosh, that's a few questions. You had a question, and if you have to leave, because of the fact that I know we have to stay on schedule, it's actually break time right now. A question right here and then in the back. And if you have to leave, go ahead. But there's just so much. Like I said, we could spend a couple of weeks on all this. I hope this has been helpful. Get legal things and financial things in order. That's the bottom line. And be sure you have the right diagnosis. Okay, your question, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry we had to rush like this. You have to check. My sister's living trust was out of date. I saw it and I told the family, you need to get this up to date or it's not going to be valid. And you may not know whether it's up to date. That's where an elder lawyer comes in. I guess that was, oh, question. I can't hear you. Oh, the lawyer that I used is in this book. I worked with him on the Parkinson's board. I was a board member of the Parkinson's resource. I trust him fully. His name is William Remery. William Remery. Too much to cover and too little time.